name is Dux, and I serve as the CTO of AvePoint Public Sector Business, but I also work with our teams around the world for solutions around the cloud and solutions specifically on driving governance and compliance. Quick background, I've been working in this technology, specifically in the world of Microsoft, since 1998. I started as a developer when I started my career in assembler. For those that doesn't know what it is, you weren't born yet. I kind of miss those days because you only have 40 commands you play with, and then you push and pull memory, and you're good, right? Now it's just a big mess. Anyway, it's a pleasure to be here in Gold Coast, and just looking forward to the session with Blair. And what we're going to do in this session, we'll talk more about the details, but really the focus, and I want to set the right expectation, we're not going to talk about every single DLP and compliance feature in Office 365. We'll be happy to answer questions if you have that. There's other sessions that covers that. But what we want to focus on, based on our experience, what we've seen, we're going to share a lot of stories, you know, with the customers we work with around the world, and specifically here in Australia as well. Blair has a lot of experience on what works from a governance and compliance strategy, especially as you move to this new world of cloud. So again, thank you for being here. And Blair, why don't you do a quick intro?
Yeah. So hey, everyone. Blair Hainsworth. I'm a senior technical solutions professional based out of Melbourne. I sort of have two specialties at AvePoint. One is migration. A lot of that is obviously Office 365 in the space we live in. And the other one is enterprise content management. And I spend a lot of my time in sort of financial services, legal, defense. And if there's any guys who love a bit of compliance and governance, it's those sectors. So yeah, topics that are quite familiar to me.
Fantastic. So just to make sure, let me double check this. Oh, there you go. Helps if I turn it on.
If you're not going to be able to click and walk around, it's going to be a tough session for you.
Yeah, I know Office 365, but I don't get figure out this clicker. Excuse, buddy, I don't think it... Oh, there you go. There's actually an on.
John.
All right, so just to make sure we're on the same page, three key things we want to make sure everybody walk away with. First and foremost, before we jump into these strategy, we got to understand... When we talk about governance and compliance, I mean, these two words have been thrown around carelessly, I would say. And especially if you come from the world of SharePoint. Anybody work with SharePoint or SharePoint in some companies? You know, oh, you got to have governance. You got to have governance. But what does that truly mean? And in the context of Office 365, how does that apply? So we're going to look at that and first and discuss some key challenges that exist and if you're not familiar with, that you will face. Number two is we'll talk about, beyond governance compliance, how you should start thinking about proper information management. Now, why should I care about that, Docs? Because unlike traditional world of SharePoint by itself or email by itself, Office 365 is essentially an information platform. You got your email workload. You got Collab, SharePoint. You got Yammer. Yesterday, Microsoft just announced, or actually today, Microsoft Graph. So there's more workloads that's lighting up. And then from a big picture, how should you think about information management? So we'll talk about that. And then lastly, we'll share three key steps on how you can put together a solid governance compliance plan. And additionally, we're going to share some examples that we work with customers on. And then definitely you can walk away with these things and take advantage of it as you progress with your initiative. Now, to get the conversation going, I'd like to paint...
I'll let you drive your slides. How about that?
All right. I'd like to paint a picture of how the world is changing today, right? So before we jump into governance compliance, so let's step back and analyze what the world looks like. So if you look at the world before, especially coming from an IT world, I mean, think about how you do things. Before, you know, you do your upgrades every 3 years. Once you do your upgrade, you tell users, don't bug us. We'll talk to you again in 3 years. Doesn't work anymore. Used to be we live in a world called waterfall. These days, oh, you got to be a scrum master, agile, Kanban, right? That's the reality. Before, we live in a world where data is limited because of the internet and the innovation of information that spreads across through this network. We have a lot of data. In fact, I would argue, you know, when the web was starting back in the late 90s, I actually founded a .com, and, you know, the big buzz was, oh, content is king. You got to have a lot of content, big data. I don't agree that content is king anymore. Context is king. Tweet that. Now, the other irony is, before, when we think of work, when we think of making a living, it's a physical place. We go to work, we clock in, clock out, have a desk. After five, we go home. Today, work is anywhere, anything, anytime. In fact, when we think about the world of mobile, I'm not even talking about devices. We're very agile. You know, you wake up in the morning, what's the first thing you do? You grab your phone, right? Look at your email, maybe respond, and you're not quite sure what to respond. You stop responding, take a shower, go grab breakfast, grab your iPad, continue responding. You're rather late, go to the bus stop, finish responding on your phone. That's called work shifting. That's just the norm we live in today. And then lastly, IT especially is perceived to be a reactionary group until the business is upset or until, something blows up. We don't really do anything about it. We can't afford to be that anymore. In this world, especially in the world of the cloud, we're expected to be responsive. In fact, this is an exciting time. I live and work in Washington, D.C. I work a lot with the U.S. government. And it's changed in the last 2 years, because 2 years ago, if I talk about cloud with government, they're like, no, we don't need that. It's not secure, right? But really, it's not even about not being secure. I mean, look at all these leaks that's going on in the States. It's about just the fear of the unknown. It's job security. One of the IT admins I was talking to in government agencies, they're like, well, docs, here's the deal. If we go to the cloud, what am I going to do? I'm not going to patch servers anymore every Tuesday. I'm not going to do upgrades and all that because it just works, right? What am I going to do? I don't really want to do that. Your job now is to be more of a trusted advisor and respond and be more proactive and help the business. It's an exciting time. It's a big time of change, and I look at this change as shift happening. Shift has happened, right? And as this shift changes, we got to step back too, and we all get excited, but be cognizant that we got to prepare and be responsible and be more proactive on how we put governance and compliance, especially around Office 365. I know Blair has an interesting point around this.
Yeah, so I guess to illustrate what Dux is saying, does anybody recognize that number? Or can anybody have a guess at what that is? Someone have a stab, get you engaged a little bit? Phone number?
The phone number is like 8675, is that? No. Possibly, yeah, phone number. Yeah,
phone number. Sorry, what was that? Documents. Yeah. Okay.
That's how much so money Blair has.
Yeah, that's a lot more. It's a lot more. All right, next one.
All right, I mean, it's right or it's wrong, right? We don't know.
We don't know, right? Okay, so does anybody know what these two words mean? Or what does it mean to you? Does anyone want to yell something out? And this helps us as well as we speak, so we know what to target in on. Yeah. So what does governance mean to you? What does compliance mean? Anyone?
Control, that's a good one, yeah.
Accountability. Accountability is a really good one, actually.
Assurance,
yeah.
Legal. Security. Processes, yeah.
Processes.
Yeah.
All right, cool. There's a lot of good ideas there. Good answers.
And I think that's where the issue is, right? When we think about governance compliance, we walk around the office, let's face it, feeling that we're all smart, right? You're in a meeting with the business and IT. Oh, we got to have governance. Yeah, governance is great. But guess what? I'm thinking control. He's thinking process, right? Blair's thinking security, HR is thinking, what? Performance eval, governance. And that's the fundamental flaw. Yeah?
Yeah.
And I thought this was pretty cool. So what if these numbers...
So does anyone realize what's happened here? So what we're sort of saying is that what these numbers are, is that those numbers arranged in alphabetical order. And the point of this is to show you that it's the context that matters, right? Right, the actual number that you see, the information you see, it only matters within its context. All right, and that's what Dux was saying tweet earlier, and that's the point I guess we wanted to point out, that governance, compliance, those types of things, they only matter within the context of the way the user's working and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, very interesting, right? Now we're looking at this all in the same context. And it sounds so basic and fundamental, but until you and the business are all on the same page, governance, compliance, these are just two words that we throw around. In fact, does this look familiar?
The bottom left is my favorite, by the way.
Oh, right, the bottom left,
Pilot becomes production. The amount of times I've had that, that's my favorite.
No, this is how it happens, right? Bottom left.
Yeah.
somebody in IT, SharePoint 2016 beta is now on MSDN. Let's download it, fire up a VM, use your machine because you're not really using it, and let's play with it. Yeah? And then you email marketing, hey, check out 2016. Whoop, whoop. And then marketing loves it, email sales, boom, new intranet in 2 weeks. 4 weeks later, business complaints, freaking slow. I can't find anything. Permission up the wazoo. But we got governance. In spite of having so-called governance strategy, compliance strategy, this still happens. And I promise you, I actually have a customer, they call their implementation SharePoint. SharePoint on-premises, SharePoint online. Yeah? They hate it. And they have governance, as so they say. You see, what's interesting about this, I went to the Microsoft website, because I want to understand, right? Everybody throws this word around governance. How does Microsoft define or even look at governance? So on the count of three, I want everybody in the room, I know it's early, read this with me a lot, all right? One, two, three. Governance is a set of policies, roles, responsibilities, and processes that guides, directs, and controls how an organization's business divisions and IT teams cooperate to
achieve business goals.
Friends, here's the problem. Every organization I go to, hey, we've got governance. Yeah, Office 365, we've got governance. I go, no, you don't. No, we do. No, you don't. What you did is you went to MSDN, downloaded a governance template, filled in the blanks, emailed it around until people signed it. Boom, we've got governance. Yes? That's it. But we forget what Blair was talking about, context. Oftentimes we think about governance and it stops like right how an organization's been, maybe right there. We don't put the context, achieving business goals. Docs, you went to the dark side now. I thought you were a dev, now you're talking about business stuff? Of course. That's where the context lies, and we miss that all the time.
Trust no one. All right, so I guess this is the IT world where we all sort of started out. This is how a lot of people sort of feel. I don't trust my users. Right? I don't trust the people who are going to use the documents. I don't trust how they're going to use the cloud. I don't trust how they're going to share things, how they're going to work on things, how they're going to manage things. All right? Does anybody else live in that, have people work with people, live in that space where they don't trust what the guys, yes? Yeah, getting a few nods out there. Yeah, so I guess what Duck sort of likes us to do and what he sort of we're putting forward is you need to foster trust with transparency with your sort of business users, right? So you need to work with your individuals and you've got to engage with them, okay? We need to look at sort of those policies and procedures, right? The things that you want people to do and work out how they understand what their role is, they understand how they fit in, they understand what they're trying to do, right? And how it sort of, you know, works with them. Those are the governance things that you're working on, they need to connect into the business processes, the way that they work, right? And you need to underpin that with your technology and not just Office 365, but, you know, and when we think Office 365, we always think email, link, OneDrive, SharePoint, maybe, you know, Dynamics, depending on what we're trying to do. But don't just think about the technologies, but also the workloads that you're running on them. So within SharePoint, you normally have lots of very different workloads that you run on there. People use OneDrive in different ways. You know, how do you manage those things?
Like upload 75 terabytes of data, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And the key here is, friends, here's the deal, right? We take an approach from governance compliance without any context, and then we automatically say, okay, I don't trust anybody, so that's why our governance is like this. But my point is, and our point is, having some level of context around the business fosters this trust and transparency. But certainly there's more work, meaning you got to know how your world evolves, how your organization evolves, and we'll share some tips on how to do that.
So, has anyone come to the Gartner conference or anyone seen this? So Gartner Research 2016, in regulated industries, 20% CIOs will lose their jobs, right, due to failing to implement sort of governance, controls, compliance. So that's probably a big factor. I don't know if anyone here is a CIO, but even if you're not, you may not be the CIO, but you might be the fall guy in that space. But yeah, so from our point of view, and as I said at the beginning, I do a lot of migrations. I do a lot of getting enterprise content into the cloud, right, whether it's SharePoint, OneDrive, those types of things. How do we go about it? And so at a high level, this is generally the process that I work through. And we've got sort of four steps, but I'll take you through sort of each one there. I guess the first bit, we sort of say discover, analyze, cleanse, destroy. So starting out, if I think about email, I think anybody who's in Office 365, did you all do email first? No, yes. Most people start out, it's like the lead-in drug maybe to Office 365. So if we take like an email example, you know, it's very simple, how much email I got, how many mailboxes, all those types of things, do I want to move it up? If I've got really big ones, do I have archive mailboxes, do I want to move them, do I want to do something different with them, move them to OneDrive, you know, integrate them into Outlook, those types of things. So that stuff's relatively straightforward. When we get into the enterprise content space, I think it does become a bit more complicated. So when we talk about discover, you know, at a high level, we're talking about find what volumes do you have? How much data you have? What type of data? Is it compatible with the cloud? You know, all those types of things. Get an overview of everything you got, your file shares, your SharePoint, if you're in eRooms, Documentum, LiveLink, all these different ones I've done with different customers to work out how we get it out of on-prem, how we get it up there. See, the analyze, really, the next phase is of that stuff, what stuff am I actually going to bring into Office 365? Just because I can bring it up there, you know, and I have the capability to do that, and I've moved 10 terabytes and 20 terabytes, and we've got guys doing 170 terabytes at the moment. Just because I can get it up there doesn't mean it's automatically a good idea. All right, so when we go through the analysis, then we can say, okay, can we cleanse? Can we focus on what's high priority, what's low priority? How do we go about that? You know, part of that is tools can tell you what's there. You know, you can do deep analysis. Part of that is business engagement. You know, so we did 10 or 11 terabytes, you know, earlier this year with a company. And what they basically did is we used the tools to get an idea of the volumes and then worked out, okay, there's 120, 130 containers per business unit. Of those, which ones are important, which ones are not important, you know, which ones do we want to move in? And then got the important stuff up there, and the last bit is destroy. I think this fits well for email. If anybody's out of the legal sector or deals with them, a lot of people in that area, if they don't have to retain it from a compliance or a governance point of view, they don't want to have it. Right, so if anything comes up, they can say, I don't have that, and I legally don't have to have it, so don't call me. Right, so destroy is actually a really good thing. It's not just about getting rid of data that's no good, you know, the MP3s that people have been installing off file shares or videos, but also getting rid of that stuff.
And the key here is, you know, if you think about the whole model, right, the cloud is an interesting place, it's an interesting time, but even before we start putting the rails around governance compliance, what's your information governance approach? And we're not saying this has to be it, but you have to think through now. Because the first step is always moving stuff up there, right? So at that point in time, even before we start thinking about governance and compliance, what's my approach on not only moving, but moving forward, how do I keep, you're never going to be all in the cloud. You always have something on premises. So how would that work, right? How would that, the cloud-based information and the on-premises-based information work together? And then what's the layer of governance compliance around it?
Yeah. Yeah, and a really good example of that is we had a customer who wanted to move. They thought about this much stuff into Office 365 and this stuff they weren't too sure about. Like, well, what do we do with it? Do we still pay to keep it expensive on-prem? Like, no, nah, we shifted into Azure. We left it there. Here is your backup of all your on-prem stuff. If you wake up in 6 months' time and you realize, actually, I did want that stuff in my OneDrive, my SharePoint, you know, Exchange, all right, we can whack it into Office 365 from there. So those are the types of things you come up with. Next step, obviously, tag, classify, secure, migrate. So what we're sort of saying is that a lot of that stuff in file shares, legacy systems, all that type of stuff, isn't really enriched data, right? It's just mess sitting out there. So we like to say use sort of tools, use technology, try and tag it appropriately, get metadata out of it, you know, all those types of things. If you're especially in defense areas, but other areas, how do you classify it, you know? In defense, you have for Australian eyes only or for UK eyes only. Sometimes you need to classify that stuff before you move it in. You need to make sure stuff is secure. One of the fundamental mistakes I think people make when moving into Office 365 with content is that they decide that the security in my on-premise, whether it's, you know, Documentum, LiveLink, file shares, whatever it is, should just be transferred straight into Office 365 and we'll call it a day, right? And I always say, can we really review why we're making that decision? All right, because first of all, you're probably moving to a new information architecture, you're moving to a new governance model, you're moving to a new set of compliance things, right? Do you really need to move all that security up there? Is that still going to be relevant, right? Do we need to look at a way to put a new security model in that'll support what you're doing? And the next step there is migrate. So that's sort of the pre-action. And then 3 and 4 is the stuff I guess we'll focus on throughout the back of the presentation, but about sort of how do we, once we're in there, you know, how do we enable people to work well? How do we automate what's happening under the hood, the governance, the compliance, to make it happen easy? And then that's sort of the living space of the documents in 3. And four there really is the end of life. So I think in the Microsoft space, it's very common to design things to create and get things in, and very common not to develop or put together things to sort of create records, archive things, or dispose of things. Does anyone agree disagree with what I'm saying?
I think there's a TV show for that called Digital Hoarding.
Yeah, exactly.
In the States, there's a TV show called Hoarders. I mean, you get sucked in. It's a bad show, but I think of it that way. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that record, archive, dispose thing, I think it's even a bigger thing. In Office 365, you know, they always say, oh, you've got all this space, you can grow forever, you can do whatever you want, and that's great, but that doesn't actually mean the information you've got is valuable, right? So it's about making sure that you stay on the rails, you stay on track.
Context, right?
Yeah.
So what we're going to do in the remainder of the session, we're going to share three specific steps on how I can deliver Office 365 success, and these are very practical. We're not saying these are the ways, but these are things that we work with our customers, and I'll show some examples and templates and checklists that you can certainly get and download as well. So the first step on how you deliver Office 365 success, again, going back to the fundamentals. As we read the description of governance is, what business goals are we trying to achieve? You know, you look at your information governance approach, here's all the stuff we have, now we're gonna move it, but then let's step back. What are we trying to do for the business, right? And at the end of the day, when you think about the business matters. Office 365, it doesn't really matter. Okay, so Doug, start, help me think about, how do I start thinking? It's a huge ask, right? I'm a technical person. And you're telling me, based on this information, we're going to Office 365, that's what I told, I have to think about the business. So how do I think about that? There's three key areas. I'm going to share some examples, and in fact, I'm going to show another video in a second. When you talk or think about the business, especially when you talk to executives, there's three core areas that you consider. Number one is how can I help the organization, or is the organization looking at making money or saving money? It's just those two things. Now, this may apply to commercial organizations, public sector, might not be, but that's one of the key categories or consideration you have to think about. What are the business priorities around making money or saving money? In the Office 365 scenario, it's always about saving money, right? We're gonna cut infrastructure, reduce all these software, just one thing. Number two, how can we expedite innovation? Right? How can we expedite innovation? How can we get people work together better, faster, sooner? Boy, I tell you, like with technologies today, Office 365, you don't have to worry about buying new software or buying new workloads to get people working together and engaged together. So as an example, I want to share our internal example. So internally at AvePoint, as you may imagine, we use these technologies. So one of the use cases that's actually pretty cool, and the cloud is helping us a lot, is every quarter, our CEO, he would do a town hall, right? I'm sure in your organization, it's a similar idea. Leadership would do a town hall. And today, town halls are done pretty much in a disconnected way. What do you mean? You know, you have a link meeting going on maybe, or a WebEx, and maybe there's a video, you see your CEO, and then people are chatting on the side, IMing, and maybe HR or corporate communications email you an agenda. So it's this disconnected experience. Y'all with me? So what we did internally in our intranet, we actually created a town hall portal. The idea is, as our leadership communicates internally with us, we want to make it a way where it's a central location. Not only can we listen and hear around the town hall, we can see people talk, we can have all the documents, all that good stuff. And then we started thinking, okay, how can we do this in a global scale effectively, serving all the offices around the world, without setting up streaming infrastructure, because that costs a lot of money, and you know, take care of it. Y'all with me? We use Azure Media Streaming. It's pennies to the dollar. If you have an Azure account, you can use that right away. So we have a portal, we have Azure Media Streaming. Maybe some of you are thinking 0365 videos. It's somewhat different as to how we did it. And not only is it easy, we don't have to stand it up, right? Innovation. It fostered better communication. So every time our CEO is doing a town hall broadcast, he's actually streaming it. Then we have Yammer, and people are talking on the side, you know, as the CEO is talking, and then all the documents and PowerPoint are there. And even better, if you're unable to attend the broadcast, it's fine. It's being recorded on demand. You can watch it again. Everybody with me? It may be something small, but that's huge for the business, because now we, as a diverse set of employees around the world, have a better experience with leadership. Right? Because in the past, when we have town halls, we just jump on a link meeting, and if we miss it, tough luck. We don't see our CEO either. Now, here's the cool part. What we're going to, I'm pushing to do, there's a couple other features there where we can integrate Bing Translate, where you can have real-time closed caption in different languages. As the CEO's talking, right, we can pick closed caption in Japanese, English, German. It's kind of cool. I just met with, 2 weeks ago, the Skype audio translation engineering team. Once the API is available, we're going to embed it so when our CEO talks in English, our offices in Japan can listen to it in Japanese real time. It may look like a bad Chinese kung fu movie, but that's innovation, and it's exciting, and it's pennies to the dollar. So those are the things you have to consider that as you move to the cloud, as you work in the cloud, that's going to help the business. Serving customers, right? There's a lot of phenomenal stories that, again, if you rely on traditional IT to do certain things, it's just too much money, too hard. How can you better serve customers when you go to the cloud? In fact, I want to show a video here of a bank in UK that they went all in to the Microsoft stack in the cloud. So check out why they did it. Can you bring up the volume, please?
Banking.
Let me kind of start over here, sorry.
Metro Bank is driving a revolution in banking. We aim to create fans, not customers. We have a culture that's all about surprise and delight. We have lollipops. We print our debit cards on the spot. We welcome dogs through the store. We count coins for free. More important, we understand that we need to be there when our customers want us. So the fact that we open 7 days a week, the fact that we're open early and late, and the fact there's always somebody to talk to, we don't have machines answering the telephones, the customer understands that we're there for them. It was important to us that the journey for our colleagues be seamless. For them, it was really important that the technology they have in their hands at work matches up to the types of technology they're using at home. Originally, we chose Salesforce as our partner because we wanted something that was more Facebook. When we saw the Windows 8 interface and what's coming with Dynamics CRM, we decided that we wanted to go the Microsoft route. CRM is our customer platform. It was all about integration. Dynamics caps the stack, but behind the scenes, we make sure that Yammer drives the conversations within the business. We use SharePoint to drive our knowledge management systems. We use Link to surface the presence of our colleagues. Office 365 is the backbone for our office infrastructure. Involving our customers in the process as well, we've started using NetBreeze from a social point of view to make sure that we respond to and engage with our customers and how they're feeling. We're opening more accounts and we're driving the effect that we're looking for, which is people recommending us to other people. We're on the road to the point where the Microsoft technology and the Microsoft stack will become central to our amazing culture. We talk about revolutionized banking. We talk about creating fans, not customers. For us, the investment in Dynamics was all about bringing that promise to life.
I love their tagline, you know, make friends, not customers. Again, that's a business priority. That's their goal. And in order to do this, they relied on the cloud. Now, so we talk about big picture, right? Big picture, help save money, make money, innovate, serve customers. But then let's bring it down a bit. So Dux, that's great. It's good. I can sell this CEO, CIO. But now how do I work with the business? When you think about business priorities, there's a day-to-day tactical stuff, right? There's a need that I have to serve, HR, project managers, accounting, what have you. You think about business needs and priorities, you got to identify solutions. The biggest mistake that we do as an IT, we still take a very IT-centric way of delivering these solutions to the business. What do you mean, Docs? Here's what you do. Typically, all right, HR, how do you like your Office 365? Email, team sites, project sites, let's supersize it. Power BI, next! That's what we do. We take a very fast food menu-driven approach in providing these technologies. I mean, they'll take it, don't get me wrong, right? I mean, think about SharePoint, if you live in SharePoint. Everybody has a SharePoint site, but come on, let's be honest with ourselves. It's a big freaking file dump, right? SharePoint's been around 12, 13, 14 years. 80% of global deployments is nothing but a big file share. Everybody has a SharePoint site, yeah? Because we take a very fast food approach. The approach we should think about is, how do I help specific business units to fulfill their business needs through this platform? I'm not even talking about intranet. You know, anytime somebody tells me today, oh, yeah, we're going to use Office 365 for our intranet, you don't have any business talking to me. I mean, sorry to be arrogant, but if you're pitching Office 365 as a great email and intranet, you're undervaluing what this technology can do. That's already a given. You could do it. Think about business workloads. So how do I do that, right? At a business level, you should be able to facilitate purposeful collaboration. You know, fine. You got your intranet. Every department has their team sites. That's okay. That's cool. But what else? How can you ease and alleviate what they do day in, day out? For example, basic things like project management. You know, today, the number one project management tool is still a 1973 technology called email. In the day and age of iPhone 6S Plus, you got TiVo at home. You got the nicest laptop. But yeah, but we use email for project management. You don't want to admit it? That's true, right? How can you improve that experience with, yeah, you still use email, but then connect the dots now with maybe just a basic SharePoint site. And then the way you work with the business, right, is using existing tools that they're familiar with. You can say things like, okay, project managers, as a part of your project management process, when a project kicks off, during project kickoff, you know, you can create this project site and we'll templatize it, right? Depending on the kind of projects, all the schedules, documents, requirements, proposals will be there. And then each project site actually has a what's called a site mailbox. So if you want to, you know, send everybody in the project team, you just email this. You still use email. So paint that in that context versus here's a project site, have a good life, right? Now, the other key point as you work with a business, and this is very, very important, use familiar tools. This is the biggest mistake that a lot of people go into, right? And let me explain. We'll talk more about this in a second. We as IT, it's a no-brainer for us. We think Office 365, okay, let's use SharePoint Online. From now on, project managers, don't use email. Use this project site. Upload documents there. I forbid you use email. Don't use Excel, right? By the way, those are the top two enterprise tools people can't live without, email and Excel. You agree? I mean, think about it. If you kill SharePoint today, unfortunately, life moves on. If you kill email and Excel, business stops, right? And what we do oftentimes is forget email, forget Excel, just go to this fancy, shiny new object. Yeah, we got Dell, we got Groups, we've got Planner. I mean, I'm very impressed with the new innovation, but frankly, in most organizations, Dell, Planner, Groups ain't going to happen in the next 3-4 years. It's a fun toy to play with, especially in large enterprises. So how do you still connect the dots and bridge that? And the way you do this, friends, is you have to think about Office 365 as a business platform. And since it's a platform, it's a clay, right? You can't go around and say, here's a clay, have a good life. How do you shape that clay? The clay could be an intranet. The clay could be a project management platform. The clay can be a corporate communication platform. This is the town hall portal I was describing. And our HR folks love this, right? Maybe you have an HR information system. Call it specific to what the business need or a business solution is about. Don't go walking around the office and say, where's the HR policy manual? It's in SharePoint. Where do I fill out the form? It's in SharePoint. What's your mom's name? It's SharePoint. Stop it. Call it what it's intended for. And don't forget, as much as you can, connect it with existing tools people use. All right, okay, so Ducks, here's what you're saying, right? Before we can do governance, compliance, strategy, and a plan, I got to figure out what the business needs are. So make money, save money, innovation, serve customers. Good, I get that. Next, I work with the business, figure out what the solutions that they need to stick in Office 365. Fine, I get that. But here's my problem, and I'm sure you know this. Everybody in the business wants everything for nothing yesterday. Let me repeat that. Everybody in the business wants everything for nothing yesterday. And I'm the guy who's my day job. I'm a system admin, and I was just knighted yesterday. Now I knight you as the Office 365 dude on top of your day job. Yes? So what do I do about this? How do I make sense of the business needs but not piss him off and still do my job? You prioritize these business needs. how do you do this, right? So let me show you an example of how I do this when I work with organizations, especially with IT, right? So I'm going to show you a very simple spreadsheet that I use. And let me kind of give you a background of how all this came about. So this actually, I started using this about 8 years ago, and back in days of SharePoint. Because the big disconnect, if you, you know, think about SharePoint, Office 365, you look at guidance for planning, it's all about technical planning, right? You go to Microsoft website. Anybody working for Microsoft? Okay, I could say this. You go to the Microsoft website, oh, I need to plan for Office 365 deployment. It'll take you to Wizard. How many people, right? What kind of environment? How many documents? It's very technical, and it's going to spit out some technical recipe. Y'all with me? With no context, remember, context into the business. So I start putting together a framework, but it has to be easy. It can't be complicated, on how can I make sense and put context into this deployment. So here's what I did, right? So just like I mentioned, this is actually for a government agency that I work with. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go to the cloud, but we can't do everything at once, and everybody wants everything for nothing yesterday. So how do I make sense of this? I said, all right, here's what we do. So I gathered all the department heads in one room in a short meeting, you know, operations, HR, finance. And then I said, look, what are your biggest business pain points, right? I didn't talk about technology. And obviously, when I asked that, they're all quiet. They didn't understand what I was asking for. And I gave an example. I said, okay, HR, for example, HR. Do you have an onboarding process, like if I want to hire a new employee? They go, yeah, we do. So how does that work? A hiring manager would request HR, hey, I need a new developer, and you go hire a new developer. And once we hire a developer, we onboard them, it's done. I go, wow, sounds like a good process. Does it ever happen, though, a new employee comes into the office, but for some reason, on his or her first day, they hang out the hallway because accounts weren't provisioned, office desks weren't provisioned? Does that ever happen to you? New employee hanging out the hallway? And then I asked HR, where's the disconnect? I thought you had a process, but employees still hanging out the hallway. And then the truth comes out. They go, well, it's IT's fault. The way we do this process is so manual. You know, everything's email. They email it to me, and when we hire a person, I email IT saying, go create accounts, and if somebody misses it in their email, person hangs out the hallway. This actually happened in D.C. 3 years ago. There's a government agency that I'm not going to name that hired 100 contractors, and they showed up on the same day. No accounts were provisioned. It took them 3 weeks to take care of it, but every day they showed up, sat in the cafeteria for 3 weeks. That was a long freaking lunch. What? And, oh, yeah, of course. It's U.S. government. What do you expect? So that's how I got the conversation going, and then light bulbs came up. Oh, and then I started going through the different groups, right? Okay, operations. Oh, yeah, docs, we got this process, SOP creation. And, you know, we email everything. It's a mess. We have this other process. And as described, listen, friends, this is important. As they're describing on column C, right? So let me, or column B, what I'm doing is in my mind, I'm starting to document what capabilities in Office 365 out of the box can fulfill that need. Y'all with me? And this is not custom code or anything. Office 365 could do a lot of stuff. So you better alert as they're describing this, right? Here's my pain. You start, oh, I could use this capability, that capability, and all that. So I go through the list with each business unit, right? They do it. And then before I end the conversation, I ask them, hey, HR, if there's a business pain that we can solve today, right? You gave me three things, metrics, report, onboarding, collab. If there's one pain we can solve tomorrow, what would it be? They say, oh, docs, is this onboarding? Number two is this. So you let them prioritize because they know their business better. I mean, it's one thing if we're saying the first things we're going to do, you know, migrate email, create an intranet, fine. That's fundamental stuff. But you move to the next level. What are your business needs and tell me what's important to you today? Now, as you do this and you get done, you go to the next tab. What I'm doing here, friends, is I'm measuring the business value of capabilities in the platform and helps me define what capabilities to light up. Because if you talk about governance and compliance context, One of the first questions I always get, we always get, is, okay, what feature should we turn on? I mean, email, I get it, but SharePoint Online, there's so much stuff. Do we do Power BI? Do we turn on Delve and Yammer? I don't know. Right? So what do you do, right? So in this case, I flip the view. I say HR, okay, look at these features. These features are a direct extract from all the capabilities I identified based on their business needs. Y'all with me? And this is important, friends, because here's what happens. I was working with a large beverage organization, advising them as they move. 80,000 people around the world. They're like, okay, Docs, what do you think? You know, what we're going to do when we go to Office 365, we're going to turn on Delve, Yammer. I think we're going to do social. And maybe, you know, the wiki capability, it's still there. We're going to turn that on. I go, who? Why? Just like you, they're very quiet, which makes me insecure as an immigrant to America that my English is not good enough. So I said, por qué? He goes, what are you talking about? I go, why do you think you need wiki, social, Delve? Isn't that the new thing Microsoft's been pushing? I go, what does Delve, what does wiki mean to Miss Sally in accounting, processing expenses every month? Tell me. They're stuck. You know, wiki, they use in the club, right? Wiki. But then, friends, now, if I question, hey, guys, in Office 365, how can we turn on Power BI? We turn on Power BI because it meets an HR need around performance evaluation tracking. Y'all with me? And so I list it this way, and then now we rank it, right? We rank the priorities. C, this is based on business priority. Now, again, it's up to you. 1 to 5, 5 being it's a big business need, right? And then what's the effort to do it? Now, this is important. What this means, 1, 2, 3, it's a level of effort if I deploy or build that for that group. Now, this is assuming you have the skill set to do it. So 1's 20 hours, 2, 3 person, and then that's at least for this organization. Again, this is an example. It may be different for you. So what we're saying here, okay, if we deploy all the lists that HR, that we would need for HR to meet their, solve their business problem, it's going to take, I think, 3 person weeks, right? Now, what's the impact to HR if we did this? 3 means it's a very high impact. 3 may mean that, you know what? Instead of 10 people hanging out the hallway every year, we're going to reduce that to 5 because we have all these automated workflows and alerts going on. And then visibility to management. Y'all follow me? How reusable is this? This is another metric that you should think about. 3 means it's very reusable. Yeah, we can templatize this site, you know, and we can reuse it not only within HR, other departments can reuse it. Or maybe a workflow, you templatize it. Or documents, whatever. And then, what's the total business value? Then you have a total business value of deploying these capabilities, 9, which is like C, D, F minus E. And there you go, friend. So what does this do? Now look at the business value. We're now saying deploying all these lists, alert, BI for HR has these value. Now you're able to quantify what these things mean. Is this helpful? This is the missing link. And here's the beautiful part. I don't make decisions myself. I just do this, and then I bring the business folks in. So I'm the system admin guy, newly knighted Office 365 dude, and you expect me to deploy this in 3 months for 80,000 people. This is what it means. You tell me. You throw the decision back to the business. And they appreciate this, actually, because the business has no context of the technology. But if you put it in this perspective, they get it. Now, we're not done, though. We got to paint the reality of IT capacity, right? On the other side, what are we saying here? If we do all this for HR, it's going to take 20 hours of IT to make sure this list can get done. Now, what we're saying on this side, to build it, to do it, it takes 3 person weeks. It could be IT doing it, or somebody has to do it. But what we're saying is to implement, IT should invest 20 hours because, I don't know, setting up accounts, enabling AD, whatever that means. What's the support impact? You know you have to support to some extent once you deploy it. It's 20 hours the first 3 months. What about training? IT total impact is a 3. So now this is where you could do the negotiation, right? Listen, this is important, and we do a poor job as IT doing this. We know our job is to get Office 365 up, light up the basic capabilities, but then once the business comes asking for stuff, we take the burden on and figure out how we do it, even we know we can't. So here's your ammunition. You can say, oh, HR, all these lists, it's a total business value of 9, which you told me it's going to reduce people hanging out the hallway, but it's an IT total impact of 3, which means it's a 1 full-time headcount, which we don't have in this fiscal year. We can't do it. Unless, if it's that valuable for you, give us money, we'll hire more people, or send somebody to training, whatever. It's a good negotiation tactic. You ask for money from them or resources to support you, if it's that important, because you can trace it back to the business value. Is that clear? And then you do all this, and then in the end, you come into some consensus. So notice there's 3 colors. This is a 3-phase deployment, 18 months of Office 365. Now, will this change? Heck yeah. You know, I take this and put a formal plan together, a formal roadmap, if you may. Part of what we do this with customers. We give them a 12-month roadmap of what Office 365 looks like. But the beautiful part of this is 3 months in, marketing comes back and they'll say, I don't like how SharePoint looks. Make it not look like SharePoint. You never get that, right? I go, okay, fine, but let's check where making it not look like SharePoint is a business need. So let me go back to these business needs. Marketing, I don't see making it not look like SharePoint is a business need. Now, it may be a valid need today because you're maybe doing some marketing campaign, whatever. Let's put it in, but what's the push and pull? What are we going to give up? What are we, y'all with me? Is this helpful? Do you guys want this spreadsheet? $100 a download. No, just kidding. You know, I'll make sure I package all this stuff. I'm going to show you a lot of documents. I think it's about 20 gigs. I'll send a big attachment to everybody. Yeah. OneDrive, right? Unlimited. But yeah, and once we're done, you know, either come by, give me your contact, or come by our booth. We'll be happy to share this. Because I think on the conference website, you just get the PowerPoint. I don't see any way to upload this stuff. Yeah. Okay, so prioritize. So just kind of recap on what I'm saying here is, to put together your solid winning governance compliance strategy, think about the business needs first. Yeah. Once you have your ducks in a row, your business needs lined up, yeah, then you start thinking about, okay, I'm going to put together my governance and compliance strategy or plan. So I give it to Blair here to kind of step you through how you do that.
All right, so I've decided I'm going to Office 365. I'm going to migrate stuff up there, maybe start Greenfield.
Yep.
Cheers. All right, and I guess being a migration guy, I'm often there right when the planning phase kicks off. And the first thing that normally happens is, so we got Damien Warwick here, is it? So I sit down in a meeting room, and I've got a few guys across from me, and they go, all right, we're going to Office 365, we're going to migrate, and we're going to set it up. And Damien here, you know, he's in charge of designing how Office 365 is going to look, and Warwick here, he's in charge of migration. So you're mainly going to deal with him, and he's just here for the meeting, and we're going to go off the races. So if you take one thing out of this session, not that what Ducks has offered you is very valuable, but the one thing I would say, I've done this a lot, okay? I've moved stuff up there a lot. Do not separate the guy who moves your content up from the guy who designs your end result, right? Because this happens all the time, and the guy who moves stuff up, and we make a beautiful migration, and we move all of your stuff in there, and everything is there, and it doesn't align with what the solution the guy designed at all right? So the first thing I'd say is, when you're putting together your plan, right, I say to people, do not split things, and I say this in meetings all the time. And the next thing that comes after that is someone goes, well, if you don't want to split the streams and you're going to be, you know, you want to see what the end result's supposed to be and what you're trying to achieve and you want to design your migration, your content move to align with the end result, then you've got to go to the meetings. And it's like, all right, well, I've just signed up for a whole bunch of really exciting meetings. So I actually go through this a lot where I sit there in the governance meetings, I sit there in the compliance meetings, I sit there in information architecture meetings, I sit there in the development meetings, all the different ones. And I've seen it in a bunch of different organizations and how they've gone about it. And that's let me know what I feel has been successful and when the end result's been successful. Because you find when you've done enough, I guess moving content or getting stuff into Office 365 is something that you can achieve really well. But getting a good business result is where you can fall over in the mismatch. So I guess the first thing I always say is partner with the business, and Dux has been talking about this. From my point of view, how do I go about it, or how have I seen people go about it? The way that normally happens is the first meeting is probably a bit like this. Everyone here is probably an IT type person. right? So I'd sit down, you sit down with IT people and you say, what do you think by governance and compliance? And someone's like, control. And, you know, work out exactly what IT thinks or what they want to govern and what their concerns are about the cloud. You know, there's a lot of concerns about putting stuff into Office 365. So that's step one. Step two is compliance. I think compliance conversation is very different now, and we'll touch on it a bit more later, but what the compliance sort of concerns are. Do many people have dedicated compliance people in their business? Can I just get one there? Got a few there. So some industries will have dedicated compliance people. Some people have certain people who sort of wear multiple hats. But when we talk about compliance, I guess we talk about, you know, people not being able to see other bits as well as making sure you adhere to legal sort of requirements. And then the third stage, of course, is once you get there, you speak to the business. And in the same way you do the requirements, gathering workshops and working out what your business needs are and what they want, you also try and subtly work out what they didn't like or what governance things they've had previously that they don't, that didn't work for them, or what business processes they're, you know, what kind of value they're trying to get with a bit of governance you can make easier for them. So jumping forward, I guess these are the options of where you can be. So I say most of us, you know, we've touched on this, live out here in this wild, wild west chaos. Anybody who uses a file share, you live in the wild, wild west. Most people use SharePoint, you live in the wild, wild west. And stuff is all over the place and there's no governance. And most people who are moving into Office 365 say, we either did an okay or a bad job of governing things. I think we spoke yesterday and you literally said to me, yeah, we have SharePoint, we're going to move it into Office 365 at a point in time. We've moved some intranet stuff up there, but what we have now is an absolute wild, wild west, right? On the other side, draconian IT control. This is where I started, I guess, my career. This is where, you know, things were. I wasn't a draconian guy, but I remember sitting down there, so a slightly younger fellow, and I was like, hold on, I can't install anything on my machine. I can't create workspaces. I can't do this. All right, I'm going to find a way to do this, and I'd work around it, which is why, has anyone here got the email from, like, Dropbox or whatever they send out? Here is every person in your company, right, who has a has accessed Dropbox from work, from your office. Has anyone got that email? Can you get a hand raise? So that's a result of draconian IT control, right?
Larry, I got to tell you, I remember a year ago, so I was in a government military agency, and one of the business users was complaining, Docs, you won't believe it, how we do stuff here with SharePoint. I go, why? To upload a document, I have to fill in a ticket request. Dear IT, can I upload this PowerPoint to the shared documents library? He was dead serious. Way to go with empowerment.
So yeah, as Dux was saying, what we want to aim for is governed empowerment. That's the phrase he's used. What I try and explain it to people is I like to use governance to create the illusion of freedom. All right. So I like the end user to believe that the system, the technology, is doing what they want it to do. Right, that they're able to work in the way they want, whether they need a new project workspace, collaboration space, whether, you know, whatever it is. Okay, they think, oh, you know, when I use it, it kind of just works really, really, really well, right? But what's actually happening is they're doing what I want them to do, right? And so that's what I call the illusion of freedom. And I had a really good example with a large Australian sort of client, and they moved out from, you know, to Office 365, and they brought us in after they'd done it because it was a bit of a mess. And one of the things that the biggest gripe that they could get across is when I want to kick off a new project or a new workspace, I literally don't know how to go about creating it. In my old system, I knew how to do that, and that is why your solution sucks, right? And that has really got nothing to do with Office 365, but literally no one actually got there and thought, when the user starts working, they've got all their stuff, they're able to, you know, work in the workspace, they can share, they can collaborate, it's a new technology, it's faster, search actually works, but they couldn't actually get new workspaces, they couldn't get new project sites, they couldn't get new things. So yeah, I really like to say, try and make sure for your end users, there is an illusion of freedom in the way that you set up your governance and the way you set up your compliance.
And one thing, too, it's, you know, we think of a governance almost always in a negative light, right? And that's how we convey it to our users as well. We consciously do it or not. But governance is not a bad thing. I mean, think about Australia, right? We live in a free country, but we're governed by specific rules and laws. Red light, stop, right? I can't just, you know, cross the street and jaywalk. Well, I did it this morning. I didn't get caught. Don't tell. But there are certain governance, right? And as Blair is saying, it's create that illusion of freedom so people could still freely work and do what they want.
Okay, so What does that mean? The first thing is governance does not equal document. So one of the first things Doug said is that when you did governance and you went to the Microsoft site and you downloaded it, has anyone downloaded it? I think it's the pyramid diagram for like Microsoft governance. You've got like my sites here and intranet here and different bits throughout. Has anyone seen that? Okay, so from probably about 2009 to 2012, you couldn't really talk about Microsoft enterprise content without saying, and we're going to have to do a governance workshop and do a governance this. And I'd sit there and you go through all these different workshops and you end up that we produce the most beautiful document of exactly how we govern our SharePoint environment, and then we'd store it, sometimes in a file share, which would irritate me because we could at least store it in SharePoint, right? But and then that was that, and we'd run off, you know, and we'd be...
I mean, imagine, right, if the Australian forefathers way from back then went to a website called constitution.com, downloaded a template, oh, let's make this our Australian constitution, boom, this country won't be what it is today, yeah? Context. I'm sure they fought blood, sweat, and tears and spent a lot of time figuring out what the Constitution is like. Now, in fairness, though, and again, no judgment, who's actually read the Australian Constitution page to page? Right? The same thing. Who in your organization has actually read a SharePoint governance from page to page?
I've written them and I don't read them, so.
And why?
I shouldn't say that, actually. This is being recorded.
Yeah? All right. So why haven't you read your constitution? Why? Why not?
It's boring.
It's not relevant. You know it's there, right? It kind of protects you as Australian, but if bad things happen, oh, we got the constitution. No, with checks and balances. That's all every time I hear. But it's not relevant. I'm ashamed to say I haven't read the U.S. Constitution, being an American. Now, there are certain governance I know. If the stoplight is red, I stop or I'll get in trouble. The biggest governance I know is, I know during the week if I'm home in D.C., I got to be home by 10 o'clock, or else upper management or my wife's governance will get me in trouble. Y'all with me? And friends, that's a disconnect. You know, we talk about governance, but we don't convey people's roles and responsibility, where there are rewards and consequences to it. We should educate our folks, not just say we have a governance document or a compliance policy. So, for example, I want to share this governance document that certainly you can tweak for Office 365. Would you guys be interested to see this? Yeah. So it's a simple example. This is the big governance document as you would think of, but I want to highlight key sections. Here you go. I have a roles and responsibilities section here. Here. So how do I, okay. Do I have some site owner here? Did I miss that? Oh, there you go. It's kind of small. Look at the upper left. It says, okay, if you're a site owner or site manager, request a site, you're now a site owner, here are your responsibilities. You're responsible for managing the site, make sure all the content's good, permission's great, blah, 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 blah. Y'all see that? In organizations I work with, I believe in what's called index card governance. Each person should be able to see and understand what their responsibilities are in a single index card. Now, if they want to see the big governance document, go for it, but at the very least, they should be educated in their role and responsibility. Now, how do you convey that, right? I'll talk more about this, but later, as you deploy and do your training, you don't just say, here's the wonderful feature of this technology, and by the way, as a site owner, here's what you're responsible for. Is that clear? Yeah. Did you guys want this document as well? Don't copy and paste and replace the names and just deploy it, okay? I know that's what you're going to do, but hopefully you know better. All right.
So striking the balance, I think a lot of people are aware of, what I'm trying to convey here. But really, we always think about capacity and technical needs when we think about governance. And a lot of, especially SharePoint governance and that sort of space, really has based around how do I not grow beyond my capacity? How do I not grow beyond site collection? How do I not grow beyond the list or whatever it is like that? I think that's fine, but really the value is on the other side of the scale, okay? So not getting caught up in your constraints, you know, your capacity, all those types of things, what you want to do as IT, and really bending towards what will give a better user experience, how they'll be able to leverage it more. Jump through to the next one. So what we're going to say is, I guess this is where you step on from talking about it into actually, you know, how you're going to go forward. Okay, we want to make it easy for people to do the right thing. Okay, we want to make it so it's simple, they don't get confused. The way we want to do that,
I guess, is we want to create common sense policies, rules, IT controls, things that are very, very, very simple. Okay? Then rather than putting them in a document, right, or sending them out to people in an email or telling them once in training, right, you want to take those things and you want to embed them into the platform in the way that you're using it, right? Whether, you know, it's in the simplest way, you could say things like tooltips, but also if you're doing site templates, if you're creating owners, those types of things, right? How do you embed that information into the site? The person knows, I know I'm the owner of this site. I know I have this site for this amount of period. I know, you know, these are the things I have to do as a site owner. And then if I leave the business, someone else needs to become the site owner, and how do we sort of do that? We also had, does anyone have any sort of compliance concerns? Will they actually have to recertify or sort of tick something off? So we have a lot of clients, actually, there's a common thing where, you know, they actually have a workspace or a project area, and every 6 months they actually have to recertify that everybody who can access this is the correct person, those types of things. That process, a lot of the time, people send out millions of spreadsheets and the people can't manage it. So those types of things you can solve by embedding, you know, the recertification process into the actual site, into the project site. So they actually just get a thing saying, come into this site, right, review it, check it all out, and then you need to let me know it's done. Because in the end, you have to trust that they're doing it, but you also have to tell them to go there and make them say they did it. And if you send them 50,000 spreadsheets saying, here are your 50 sites, I want you to review them, they're not going to open the spreadsheets. But if you direct them to the site, direct them to the location, take them through the steps, it's easier. And really the last one, and the one that I focus on the most when I'm trying to get things done, is you need to try and automate this as much as possible. Right? You don't want to have people having to click, having to do things, you know, because they won't do it. People are inherently lazy, and if you try and make them govern the stuff for you, right, and make them click on things and tell them, but it's your job, but it's your job, you know, you're going to go blue in the face telling them to do things, but they're not actually going to do it. So I think the... Yes, this is it. I was hoping this was the next one. I couldn't remember if there was one more in between. Okay, so this is, I guess, a sample process, and this is a very common one that in Office 365 that comes up, and it's something that sort of resonates with a lot of people. So I'm going to use this as an example. All right. This is my basic understanding of what the creation of a project site, a team site, you know, a project server, whatever type of site in SharePoint or Office 365 looks like to me. All right. Everybody sits down and goes, we need to be able to create a site. Right, we know how to use site templates or all those types of things. So we're going to build something that is going to provision our site to put it maybe in the right place, right, and to have the right features on it and the right controls and the right metadata and the right columns, the right libraries, whatever it is. Okay, and that is pretty much all that happens. Right, so you have the birth, and we spend a lot of time talking about that as IT guys, as technical guys. Then we give it to the users, and they live in the life period. And nothing really happens in the life period. They just use it. They use the share features, the collaboration features, all those types of things, right? You know, they might add tasks or, you know, change it. Whatever you want to empower them to do, they do that. So nothing really happens from our point of view. And this is my full representation of the lifecycle management of content in SharePoint Online. Birth, life, inactivity, nothing. Right? That's pretty much what happens. And does anybody sort of agree with that? Anybody live in that world? Where they really good at birthing things, but then it just lives forever. All right, so what happens? How do I go further? How do I, you know, make it better? How do I automate it? So we think, okay, what happens if nobody, you know, how do I govern a site? So what if you have a lease expiry? All right, so when I give somebody a site, I give it to them for 3 months or 6 months or 12 months or 2 years, right? And that is their lease. And so they never actually own the site forever. The site, no site is ever perpetual. Right, they have an automatic time constraint on their site that they're using. Right, might go in there. You have a lease trigger expiry. Right, what happens? Right, after we trigger the lease expiry, we lock the site. Maybe we lock the site for 3 months. Maybe we lock it for 6 months. Maybe for 2 years. You might have compliance constraints, all those types of things. So you lock it, and then eventually you might delete it from Office 365. You don't delete it just because you're worried about storage. You delete it because it's not relevant anymore, because it becomes clutter, because it just becomes a mess, right? That's the type of things happen there. What else is there, all right? Okay, so we say we have a lease. The lease says the entire time you've got a 3-year lease, you know, and at 1.5 years in, there's still 1.5 years to go, but no one's actually used it in a year. So shouldn't we be able to monitor, hey, hold on, nobody's actually using this, so would we really need to run all the way to the end of the lease, right? Or do we need to say, hey, site has been inactive, what do you want to do? So what happens in this lease and site inactivity? You need to contact the site owner, right? So every site has to have an owner. You should embed that owner into the site so anybody who's accessing it can see who owns it, right? So the person who owns it know they own it.
And really the key here, again, in the interest of time, the key here is you know, there's all these activities and processes, but today, the way we think about it is very manual. We rely on our users to fulfill these things and do it on our behalf. So the more you can automate it, the better. And, you know, additionally, from a compliance perspective, the easier we can make people to do the right thing, not only from an end user perspective, but also from an organizational perspective. You want to track compliance. Again, Office 365, right? What's important to you? Credit card number violation, PII violation. If it's easy enough for people, for organizations to surface that, and you know, Office 365 or Microsoft has made a lot of investment around this for DLP, and you could dig deeper into it, the better it would be. But all this is useless unless, again, you have the proper processes in place, the policies in place, and identifying what's important to you to track and to look for. Yeah. Now, the third step. So we talked about identifying business needs, prioritizing it. Number two, putting together a relevant governance and compliance plan. The third step is how do we effectively enforce it and facilitate sustainable adoption? You know, if one of the key things, and some of you may have read some of the stuff I put together, is when I think about adoption, it has to sustain. Generally speaking, when IT thinks about adoption, it's training, right? Adoption equals training. Training is important, but that's not enough. How do you sustain this through time? And sustaining is not just about people using it, but ensuring the platform would support on how they use it. So first things first is just like partnering with the business to put together your plan, it's key that we work with the business group to communicate and convey our governance and compliance strategy. Because these folks have done this before. They've launched campaigns. They've launched communications. And they can help us with it. From a training perspective, it has to be relevant. What's in it for me? And I described this earlier. It's key to highlight people's responsibility in this platform. Index card governance. And you embed that in the training. So for example, when you're training project managers on how to use this for project collaboration, you also say, in addition, if you request a project site, you're responsible for permissioning. You're responsible for the PII, all that good stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah, a good example of that is I worked with a big Australian company, and they've really moved away from sort of heavy training models and really into a lean model. They don't have the resources. They're globally dispersed. They can't get 30 people in a classroom, right? And when I was there, and they had their sort of training communication consultants who were in there, and they said, hey, you present from time to time. We're going to do training. Right, I need you to come to this meeting room for 2 days, and we're going to do like all these videos on how to do things, right? And what they did is, you know, if you create a site or if you get a new site, they would have, I would film some video of, you're the site owner. This is how you transfer the contact. This is how you add a new user to your site, and this is how you do this. Just basic stuff that is relevant for that particular role. And when you got a new site, you would say, here is your site, here is the location, you have it for 3 years, and here is the training video of how you manage that site for you. Right, so they've actually got their training and they're getting that together with their site and it's all in a package, right? And that way they can move away from that heavy training model to a lean training model, but still teach people what their role, what their responsibility is, and what they have to do with their site.
So Blair, it's interesting. So we certainly take the same approach even in with our US customers. And one of our customers I just talked to recently, well, Docs, this is great, good stuff, but can we automate it as much as we can? Can we automate it in a way where a project manager requests for a site, and if they have external people and they own the site, they can't change permission. They can't create sub-sites. We're going to limit the kind of files they upload. We also want to make sure if they upload a Word document, a credit card number, we're going to reject it or redact it. Can we automate all that stuff? Because, as they say, good highway to hell is with good intentions. It's paved with good intentions, something like that. There you go. Right? People forget. They're not malicious, but they forget. Can you automate all that? And the answer is yes. The beauty of the Office 365 and the vast ecosystem, you're able to do this. I mean, if you're interested to learn more, we could talk to you about technical details. The other area to drive sustainable adoption is make sure your support is scalable. I mean, it's one thing, right? Our big dream is people love this, use this, grow it, but let's face it, they're always going to ask questions. As IT, we can't answer every single question, especially the questions around, what do I click? That won't scale. So put together three buckets of self-serve or scalable support from self-service. I don't know if you guys have seen this add-in to Office 365 called Visual SP. Essentially, it provides in-context help. Literally, if you're in the library, you can click a little video that says, how do I upload? A little pop-up would show up. It's kind of cool. So they can help themselves for basic things. Put together a community-based type of learning where peer-to-peer, they can work and help each other. Use Yammer for that, or community site templates on SharePoint Online. And then ideally, IT should focus on the heavy lifting, right? So you can certainly put this model together. And again, part of the resource we'll share with you, as you walk out, make sure you have my colleague Karen scan you. I'll give you, it's like a three-pager support model for Office 365 that you can leverage as well. To facilitate sustainable adoption, you want to ensure security and compliance on the user side. This is important. You know, we think about security and compliance from the IT side, but guess what? Your HR folks, legal folks, they're looking for this stuff. Y'all with me? They want to make sure that if they send a contract out, it only goes to the right person. And security and compliance varies depending on how you work, where you work, the policies and regulations. Let me share a really cool example. So today I'm working with one of the biggest media companies in the world out of New York. And here's their biggest problem. It's not a joke. They said, our biggest problem is IP theft. I go, what do you mean? He said, you know, most of our celebrity for our new movies, they're contractors. Literally, I would send a movie script of an upcoming movie to, let's say, I'm just making this up, this is not true, let's say Tom Cruise, but I would send it to a Gmail address. Hey, Tom, check out this new movie. You know, we want to hire you for it. There's nothing to stop Tom to walk into another movie studio and show them what's coming up. Y'all with me? That actually happens a lot, right? It has nothing to do with the security of the cloud, but again, the missing link is the user. So how do we protect them, right? How do we protect situations like tonight? You're gonna go to the big night in the movie world. What if you leave your device? Because you know, you came from the conference, go directly, you leave your laptop, which has already logged into your environment. How do you prevent that? So here's a scenario on how we can prevent that. So I actually work with a customer where we put in geofencing, geolocation capability on top of Office 365. So the idea is, the rule is, okay, if somebody accesses our SharePoint Online site outside of the office, it can only be accessed in a specific location. So when they try to access it with, you know, from home, we take our phone, take a picture, it validates the GPS, and if it's the right location, the site loads or the content would load. So if they walk down to Starbucks, even though with the right username and password and right device, they can't get in, right? Now, what would this look like on the admin side of the house? On the admin side of the house, if I want to run audits and see who's been accessing our environment, so I can define user, define specific device, but I can define location. I can say, okay, Doc's just logged in from this longitude, latitude. I wonder where this place is. Let me click on it. Boom, map shows up. This is where Docs access that specific site or file. Woohoo, big brother. Now, I'm almost done, buddy. So my point is, if you want to facilitate sustainable adoption, make them feel secure. Don't get in the way. And you know, our biggest problem is Box, Dropbox, collaborating with external people. Office 365, external collab capabilities. We've helped customers with secure external collab as well. And point being is, to be successful, your end user should see it as an easy way to do and get their job done securely as well. So, when we think about delivering Office 365 success, right? For winning governance and compliance strategy, step one, what's the context? Identify and prioritize business needs. Step two, put together a governance compliance plan. Step three, make it easy for people to do the right thing to sustain adoption. What do you guys think? Useful? All right, before I turn over to my colleagues at Microsoft, I want you guys to shout out this word really, really loud. So they're gonna ask you what we talked about, all right? One, two, three. Shift happens. Thanks again. Enjoy the rest of the conference and come by if you want to chat further, all right?